pase, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo,
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Wednesday, March 27th, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Rollins. As always, joining us on the line this morning, live from Montreal, but covering U.S. Men's National Team, U.S. Men's National Team insider for Yahoo Sports, Doug McIntyre. Doug, how you doing today?
Doing well, Kevin. Hi, Dwayne. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well, and of course, Doug, you followed the U.S. game against Chile very closely last night, Ecuador earlier than that. What do we make out of these last two games, if anything?
Yeah, it's a good question. First of all, thanks for covering the U.S. national team on your show, guys. Yeah, I mean, it was the first chance for the full squad to get together. Obviously, it's a FIFA window, so all players available to new U.S. coach Greg Berhalter for the first time. Berhalter just took over in December. The U.S. had gone more than a year since the disaster of not qualifying for the World Cup without a head coach. So a lot of intrigue around these two games. Like you said, a game against Ecuador last week, a 1-0 win in Orlando. I was at that game. I wasn't at the match last night in Houston. And a much bigger test, I think, last night against Chile, the two-time defending Copa America champions. They brought a strong roster. Arturo Vidal, who we all know, headlining that squad. Obviously, the Barcelona midfielders also played for Bayern and Juventus. So, you know, very well-known player around the world. And they presented a much different challenge for the U.S. in that Berhalter's really emphasized a sort of ball possession game for his team. And there's been some legitimate questions about whether or not the U.S. is capable of playing that way against some of the top teams in the world, and Chile certainly is one of them. And the way Chile plays as well, they don't, you know, it's not a team that's going to sit back and try to kill you on the counter, even though they're capable of doing that. It's a team that comes out really aggressively and high presses, doesn't give you a lot of time on the ball. So it was a really interesting challenge for Berhalter's team. And they struggled. I thought they struggled quite a bit in the game. They had only about a third of the possession over the course of the match, a little bit less than 33% actually. So, you know, they were under pressure a lot of the match, but they still ended up, you know, getting out with a respectable 1-1 result and a very good goal by Christian Pulisic, their headliner earlier in the match. Unfortunately, he had to leave with an injury. But overall, I think it's from these two games, I think, you know, a win and a draw. And Berhalter learned a lot about his players heading into the Gold Cup. So I have to think that, you know, they have a good body of work to assess things going forward from these two games.
Obviously, the injury to Pulisic was a major talking point after this game, and certainly his lack of playing time this year for Dortmund, moving to Chelsea next year, we all know. How big of an issue is that? The injury, we'll see, but in terms of his playing time this year, should there be something to be concerned there?
Yeah, I mean, the concerning part, Dwayne, is that, you know, as you said, Pulisic had been in and out of the lineup for Dortmund this year for a number of reasons. He's had some muscle injuries, leg muscle injuries this season. So I think that makes what happened last night even a bit more concerning. He was taken out of the match for what we're told was precautionary reasons, but it's a quad injury, and we saw him pull up, and he clearly was uncomfortable, and you know, he's had some issues there this season. So you know, there's a big game for Bayern coming up for Dortmund against Bayern, their arch rival, coming up. You have to wonder about Pulisic's availability for that and towards the end of the season as well. So concerning for the U.S., you know, they want to have you know, their best players in top form, having gotten a lot of playing time, heading into a Gold Cup that the U.S. absolutely wants to win. They're the defending champions, and I think that after, you know, again, not qualifying for the World Cup, they've sort of, you know, they look at that tournament as one they really want to win. And if they don't have Christian Pulisic healthy and in top form and having played a bunch of games going in, that's concerning, especially after Weston McKennie, the other 20-year-old star for the U.S. team that plays for Schalke in Germany, he injured his ankle against Ecuador, and word is he's going to miss the remainder of the Bundesliga season. So he's in a race for fitness ahead of the Gold Cup. So when you look at, you know, arguably the two most important players for the U.S. team struggling with injury, not an ideal situation.
With all the changes in North American international soccer, all three teams have a new coach over the last year. And we're talking about John Herdman for Canada, Greg Berhalter, United States, Tata Martino for the Mexican team. This Gold Cup is taking on a hype of its own. How excited are you for this summer's Gold Cup, Doug?
I'm very excited. I won't be covering it. I'll be with the U.S. Women's National Team at the Women's World Cup, but yeah, we'll definitely be watching from afar. I agree with you. And it's also the first Gold Cup to be played since the announcement that the Canada, Mexico, and the United States are going to host the World Cup in 2026. So a lot of attention on the three programs. We saw what Canada did in the last Gold Cup. It was kind of Alfonso Davies' coming out party. We talk about guys that are injured for the U.S. Unfortunately, Davies missed in Canada's most recent match. So I think, you know, everyone's hoping that all the top players from all three teams are healthy and available. And I would love to see all three teams in the final four. But we'll see what happens this June and July.
How much pressure is on Greg Berhalter to perform well, at least for his player, to perform well this summer in the Gold Cup, knowing, like you mentioned, that there's the big elephant in the room of the non-qualification, the last World Cup, and you have the new changes of the coaching staff. So how important is the pressure to win this Gold Cup?
I mean, it's not like Berhalter's going to get fired if they don't win. Let's be honest. Sure. He's a long-term appointment. He's going to be around. So there's, you know, when you talk about pressure, there's degrees of pressure. That said, I mean, I don't think there's any question that, you know, the U.S. Wants to win this Gold Cup, feels that they have to win this Gold Cup. They've been very successful in the tournament. Mexico's the only country that's won more Gold Cups than the United States. Canada's the only other team that's ever won a Gold Cup. So it's certainly the U.S. and Mexico are the favorites going into that tournament. And yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think psychologically for the U.S. program, for a completely revamped U.S. team, some of the guys, you know, we talked about Weston McKennie before, he wasn't even on the squad, hadn't even been capped when the U.S. failed to qualify back in October of 2017. And there's some other guys that are clear-cut starters for the U.S. Tyler Adams, who we know from MLS, played for the Red Bulls in New York, and now is with RB Leipzig over in Germany, another 20-year-old key player for the U.S. That hadn't been capped at that time either. So it's a different team, and I think in order to build confidence, especially against the same CONCACAF opponents that they're going to face in World Cup qualifying, is absolutely imperative. And I asked Berhalter if he had to win the Gold Cup last week, and he stopped short of saying that, but, you know, basically gave a general answer that, of course, you know, in any tournament you want to win. But, from everything I've heard, they're gonna make sure they have the absolute top squad they can have. There's also an under-20 World Cup going on just before the Gold Cup starts. There's been some speculation that some of the young U.S. players could go to that tournament. I think that, but I don't think that there's any way that Berhalter lets any player that he wants on his squad go to the under-20s. He's going to have a full strength team with an eye to defending the title they won in 2017.
All right. Speaking of a full strength team and a player that a lot of U.S. fans have been down on since the debacle against TNT, and that would be TFC captain Michael Bradley and U.S. captain Michael Bradley, who had a great two games, I think it's fair to say. Has he sort of put himself back into an undisputed spot in that central midfield position?
I wouldn't go as far as to say undisputed, Dwayne. I think that he's going to be in the mix for the next couple of years anyway, certainly through the Gold Cup. I think he's a guy that, given the amount of international experience he has, over 140 international caps, has played in three World Cups, or two World Cups rather. He's a player that they're going to need to rely on for experience, at least initially, and certainly given some of the young players that I mentioned as well, that have all the talent in the world but don't have a lot of experience. And we all know how difficult it can be to go on the road and qualifying in CONCACAF, some of the conditions that the teams are faced with, whether it's the fields or weather or travel, all those things that, you know, I think it's easy for people to say don't matter until you actually get down into some of these environments and see what the players are up against. So Bradley didn't start the first game. I think Will Trapp from the Columbus Crew, who was Berhalter's captain with the Crew when Berhalter coached that team he's emerged as the sort of first choice holding midfielder, I think, in Berhalter's system. And Bradley's right there in the mix, pushing Trapp as well, and he's certainly going to get minutes. And again, you know, I think you know, at 31 years old, I don't know how realistic it is for Michael Bradley to, you know, to think that Michael Bradley's going to play in the World Cup in Qatar in 3 years he'll be 35 at the time. So, you know, but for the short term, I think his experience matters, and he can still play. I mean, we talked to Berhalter during the January camp, which was only MLS players at the beginning of the year, and he said, look, you know, Michael Bradley's been the best player on the field. So for the folks that say he shouldn't be on the team, you know, that's what I would tell them. So, you know, again, once you get on the wrong side of 30, the legs can go quickly, but I think for now, Bradley still has a role to play with this team.
Doug, now looking in the future, looking at the potential friendlies between now and the Gold Cup, what is right in front of the U.S. men's national team? What is next? What should the gear for really quickly? The Gold Cup's coming just a few months, but are we looking at a few friendlies for the U.S. men's national team? Are we looking for an extended camp before the start of the Gold Cup?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it'll be like a World Cup camp that's a month long or anything like that. And the scheduling's interesting because the European seasons are going to end in early May and the Gold Cup doesn't kick off for another month. So I'm curious how much rest the European-based players that are under consideration for that roster get, you know, what the approach will be for that. But, yeah, there'll be a couple of games prior to the tournament, as you would expect, for the U.S. The send-off match, if you will, the last game before the Gold Cup, has been reported. So the U.S. is going to play Venezuela in Cincinnati, obviously home of the MLS expansion team FC Cincinnati this year. So a big crowd, I'm sure, expected for that match. And before that, they're going to play a match in a new stadium anyway, in Washington, D.C., Audi Field, a sparkly new home venue for D.C. United. And that match will be on I believe it's June 5th, and I'm hearing the opponent's going to be Jamaica. So, you know, a team that will be involved in the Gold Cup. I don't know that it was the first choice for the U.S. I'd heard Paraguay mentioned as a potential foe back about a month ago, but clearly, you know, that didn't work out. So it looks like it'll be Jamaica and Venezuela. And yeah, those are important games as well, because, you know, once the games that matter start, you know, that the results really count. And, you know, you can talk about the three win, no loss and one draw record that Berhalter's accumulated to this point. But, you know, we'll really start counting when it gets to the Gold Cup. So for sure, the U.S. is going to want to take advantage of those two friendly games and make sure that they're opening that tournament in top form.
All right, let's jump ahead to another competition in CONCACAF that I think probably has some mixed thoughts of in the United States, and that of course is the Nations League. We'll find out the groups later today. Yeah. What is going to be the relationship to the U.S. national team and that Nations League? Do you think this is something that fans will ever get behind down there?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm really not sure. I mean, you know, I remember that when the Gold Cup really didn't move the needle in the U.S. At all. And that's absolutely changed in the last number of years. Every Gold Cup is bigger and better, and it's weird. It's almost like we forget that it's happening. And once it starts, there's usually quite a bit of attention on it. And that even goes for the so-called off-year Gold Cup, the Gold Cup that takes place before the World Cup, where teams are usually involved in qualifying. That's the priority. Their top choice player is usually not available for the Gold Cup. And even then, you know, you're seeing replays on SportsCenter. You're seeing, you know, mainstream news outlets pick up coverage of the tournament. So it's hard to say. I think, like anything else that's new, it's going to take time for people to figure out what it's all about. And it'll depend on some of the matchups. I think, you know, if it's the United States against some of the smaller teams from CONCACAF, you know, maybe that's not a recipe for creating a ton of interest. But you never know, and I think that the U.S. team is at the point now, and I'm getting that way for the Canadian team. It's certainly like that for the Mexican team, that whenever these teams are in action, people are interested. They want to see, you know, even if it's a friendly match, they want to see who the next players coming up are. They want to see what the coach is doing. They want to see their team win and succeed. So, you know, once the games get underway and you know, the competition's taking place, you know, I think that people will start to want to know more about it and come around, and certainly we'll end up watching the game.
Doug McIntyre of Yahoo Sports. You can follow Doug at By Doug McIntyre. Doug, before we say goodbye, I would remiss not talking to you about Major League Soccer. It's 2019 season has started now. It's week number 5 this weekend. And full disclosure, Doug and I used to be in proximity in Montreal at the Montreal Press Box, so we've seen our fair share of Montreal Impact games. And I'm wondering, what do you think about the 2019 Montreal Impact and the beginning of the year in Major League Soccer?
Yeah, I mean, the Impact, they're off to a pretty good start. And, you know, the one loss they have in Houston, I think there probably shouldn't have been a red card in that game early on the Dynamo and for a challenge. I think it was on Ignacio Piatti. And, if that call is given, you know, maybe the Impact are off to an even better start this season. I think last year was tough for them. I think Remy Gard coming in, like for any European coach or any coach from outside MLS, it's a different league. You know, the player acquisition rules, can be convoluted. It takes time to get used to, you know, like players, it takes time to get used to the travel. A lot different than it is in France or England or any European country where you're on planes for hours on end, and how much that can take out of you. There's, you know, teams have different styles. It's a unique league, MLS is. So I think Gard is much better prepared this season for some of the things that, he's going to expect, that really was just, you know, he was just learning by trial and error last year. So I'm not really surprised to see the Impact come out. I think towards the end of last season, they were really good. To see them come out with a good start, it doesn't surprise me. It's always interesting. Like, I always feel like, you know, certainly south of the border in the state, you know, people really do not pay much attention to the Impact. Even obviously Toronto's received a bunch of attention the last few years just because they've been so good. And also, you know, with Bradley and Josie Altidore, two key U.S. men's national team players there, I think a lot of folks in the States paid attention to that team. Vancouver less so, and certainly Montreal even less, obviously, since the bulk of the coverage of that team is in French. So, people sleep on them, but it's a good team, and this is a team. I mean, I remind my friends all the time back in the States that, you know, this is a team that came very close to winning the CONCACAF Champions League in 2015. They went to, you know, MLS semifinal and came very close to beating Toronto FC, arguably one of the best teams in MLS history in 2016. I think Montreal, for me, looks like a playoff team. The East is interesting this year, and that you have a number of pretty good teams and then a number of teams that don't look very good at all. So I think the Impact have a real chance to make the playoffs, and obviously when you get into the playoffs, anything can happen. So maybe they will surprise some folks again this year.
Doug McIntyre of Yahoo Sports. You can follow Doug on Twitter at @ByDougMcIntyre. Thank you so much for your time today, and I can't wait to see you this season, Doug.
Look forward to seeing you too, Kevin. Thanks, Dwayne. Anytime to come on, guys. It was a real pleasure talking to you guys.
And we'll be right back after this short break.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at @SoccerTodaySPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/Sports Podcasting Network.
And we're back on Soccer Today, Dwayne Rollins and myself, Kevin Laramay. Dwayne, that was fascinating, and it's fun to, full disclosure, Doug, I've been knowing Doug for a few years now, covering game in Montreal with Doug, and I've always wanted him on, and for professional reason, it wasn't able to be arranged just a few days ago. I'm like, oh yeah, I think we can now. So I'm really happy Doug was able to join us today, and it's fun to finally talk to someone that you actually analyzed game with before. And, Dwayne, journalists in Canada and in Montreal are not always fascinated by the league itself, right? You and I watch, like, I can watch Colorado versus Columbus on a rainy Tuesday night, no problem, on a stream. I'm used to it. It's second nature to me, but I wouldn't say it's the case for everyone. So to be next to someone that you have some affinities with regarding the games and the scores, so watching one game, him and I, like, we could be watching the Impact live on the press box, and he has, like, on his laptop, 2-3 games open, streams from everywhere, and I'm like, yeah, that's my kind of guy.
Fair enough. We'll wait till, you know, York 9 via Pacific FC is part of that streaming daily consumption there. So that's going to be some interesting weekends coming in exactly a month today, Kevin. One month today to the Canadian Premier League starts. If you want to listen to us talk more about it, we can go back to yesterday's show and certainly tomorrow on Two Saltutes. But
And before we move on, Dwayne, sorry.
Yeah, in terms of the U.S.,
I just have a little plug. We wanted to do it yesterday, but we ran out of time, and it passed by my thought. Barton Battalion, the Barton Street Battalion, tomorrow night in Hamilton, they're having a fundraiser event, a trivia night. Just go to the Barton Street Battalion Twitter feed right now or later today to get all the details and how you can help or attend tomorrow night.
Fair enough, yeah. And there's a prize of a nice scarf that they have up there. And I think that they might even have some packages tied into the opener on the 27th as well. So lots of fun stuff going on there. And, you know, those guys like to have a good time on a Thursday night in Hamilton, too. So if you're up for that, then West End of the GTA, then give her a shout. I'm sure the Hamiltonians just love being called the GTA again. Golden Horseshoe. Sorry, guys.
Sure. Yeah, sure, sure. It's going to be a Thursday that feels like a Friday night. But, yeah. So 1-1, U.S. men's national team, Chile. That's interesting. Christian Pulisic, my next-to-be favorite star, right? He's going to be a Chelsea player, so he's going to be a player I look forward to watching a lot. Came out injured. But Chile, a big opposition. And, yeah, we did learn a little bit off those two games as well. Seems to be positive going forward, and they're not leaking goals anymore, and they seem to be able to find a breakthrough, but it's not easy, though. But it's going to be this way moving forward for the U.S. men's national team.
Yeah, no, first, look, again, I'm not someone who's been overly critical of the program over the past couple of years, because maybe it's that, you know, degree of separation that we have from it, that we're able to look at it a little more objectively than someone who's just a passionate partisan. But certainly, I think under Berhalter, they have shown that they have the ability to be tight. A 1-1 draw with Chile is a decent result. It's a friendly, so you take it with a grain of salt. But certainly, there is no reason to not expect the United States, particularly since they're once again hosting it, is not, if not the co-favorite, then at very least the second favorite for this tournament. I do tend to think Mexico is a step ahead of all of CONCACAF right now, but in a, you know, you put the home factor in there, and maybe they can raise that game. It'll be very interesting to see where both Mexico and the United States measure against, and Costa Rica too. I think Costa Rica is ever going to win a Gold Cup, I think it's going to be this summer, so they are certainly an interesting play in there too. But I just have this.
Are you there?
Yeah. Sorry, you're breaking up a little bit. So I was just making sure you weren't still speaking. But yeah, it's just going to be interesting, is what I was saying, in terms of just where teams match up. And I do think that, not to belabor this, but having those Nations League qualifying games and giving all of those teams the opportunity to play and getting a fairer representation in my mind of what that pool, what that roster is going to look like. And you're getting teams like Bermuda in there, which on the surface, like it's weaker, but I think it's going to be stronger because they played four games to get there. I believe that you're going to have a better World Cup tournament than we're used to seeing. And it's 16 teams. It's going to seem real again. We're not dealing with best third place finishes. We're not dealing with three team groups. It's straight up. We're going to play a four game, you know, group stage, and top two go through. And that, to me, it's finally a tournament.
Yeah, it's not a gimmick. It's a tournament. But as of Wednesday, 11:28 a.m., the international break is over. Woohoo! We're back. Club soccer is back. Club football is back. And it starts back this weekend, Dwayne. But what will we remember from the mid to late March break in 2019? Anything that caught your attention and will stay with you in the next few years when you think back of this March 2019 international break?
It's no secret that I absorb a lot of home nations kind of content. So I will talk a little bit about the bizarre international break that the home nations had. First off, England looks like maybe arguably the second best team in the world right now. I mean,
it's all
Europe anyway.
It's all in the sweater vest. Everyone get your sweater vest. I'm on board the Gareth Southgate bandwagon. England, it's coming effing home.
Look, I mean, hell of a result they got against the Czech Republic, and you know, to get the other result too. But yeah, it is a remarkable story. They are better than they were in the World Cup. They are building off of that with a young team, and it's all built up off of the success they, I think, that they've had at the lower levels. I think that England stripped it down and said, we've got to figure out how to win at any level, and they did so, and that has allowed them to win at the top level. Now, whether they can continue this at the European Championships in next summer, year, like summer, year and a half from now, remains to be seen. That's going to, but the final's there, the final's at Wembley. So if football's coming home,
Yeah,
it will
it might be that.
come home. It will end at home. So that will be something to watch over the next year. But all the other side of it is the top half of the island. The Scotland, what the hell happened there? This is it's kind of disturbing. Now, Northern Ireland had a decent run, but Ireland, you know, kind of not. Gibraltar, they only won 1-0. So there's been some bizarre in the home nations, and I can include England doing well as part of those bizarre results because I've been following for a long time, and I shouldn't say that. England does well in qualifying typically, but certainly not this well. They haven't looked this good in a long, long, long time, if ever. Well, certainly not in my lifetime. Even in 1990, I don't think they this well. They kind of were scrappy, and you know that 90 team sputtering at times, right? They got hot at the right time in that tournament and were able to get to the semifinals. This is the best extended run for the England national team I can ever remember, and that's worth celebrating, I think. And as I said, the less said about Scotland, the better. I have a lot of Scottish friends out there. A little, you know, if you look down my family tree, there's some Scottish in it, as there is pretty much anyone in this country.
Oh,
So,
yeah,
yeah.
that's true. No, it's probably some in mine too. But no, you know what I'll remember too. It's not a big deal, but Portugal, two draws, and Ronaldo has already called the fans to calm. He's like, "Ah, don't worry, don't worry. It's just two draws to begin with. We still got what, like, seven games to go. So don't worry, we'll pull it through and we'll defend our European championship." So those are the world of Ronaldo. We'll see if he can pull through. But Dwayne, of course, what I'll remember from this international break is the 4-1 Canada win, the Piet back pass. Unfortunately, oh, I love Samuel Piet, but next time if I cross path with him, I'm gonna have to maybe pull his leg a little bit with this great back pass that he did to Milan Borjan that cost Canada the number one place in the group of the Nations League qualifying. But you know, the win itself was amazing. Love to watch Marc-Anthony Kay. There's a few players that you and I have talked to a lot of the years that have this show, since this show has been on, that have been growing in front of us, and Marc-Anthony Kay is one of them. Balu Tabla, Alphonso Davies, and there's a few other. But Marc-Anthony Kay is becoming a great player for LAFC really quickly. He's almost he is almost a penciled in player in the start of every game for Bob Bradley's team. And a year after his Major League Soccer debut, now he is a mainstay for the Canadian national team for this summer's Gold Cup, too, part of the golden generation that's coming up. It was fun to watch those players. And I'll remember this, John Herdman creating out of thin air a brand new position, the left wing back midfield attacking position.
Fair enough. Yeah, Marc-Anthony Kay was part of that 2015 League One Ontario TFC, what was called TFC Academy at the time, but a TFC 3 now championship team. The only time TFC won a championship in League One Ontario, that was a team that was absolutely stacked. If you look at it, they've got a couple players that are in MLS. You've got a couple players, you know, got a player like Mobile Bully that played professionally in Syria, is now running up goals in the indoor league and probably will emerge in the Canadian Premier League. Three or four guys. Dylan Sacramento is a guy that's emerged in the Canadian Premier League setups. It was a really stacked team, and it was fun to watch. And it's nice to see a guy from that team make it to the national team level. And Marc-Anthony Kay is a nice guy too. So we've talked about him a lot on this show, and we continue to cheer him on and continue to be amazed by his development. And he's now established himself as they made a position up to get him on the pitch. So that tells you all you need to know.
You know, it's awesome, too, that we're starting to see at the top-end level here in North America the hard work that our friends in League One Ontario, Dino Rossi, and many more places, the PLSQ as well. Let's not forget about the PLSQ. I think we're seeing at the top end now 5 years later for League One Ontario, 4 years later, same for PLSQ. We're seeing the result of those hard the hard work day in, day out. You've seen it yourself. You worked there. You were soccer operations, and you've seen players grew, like bloom, and now are professional players, and now Mark Anthony Kay representing Canada and doing well while doing so. So this is the future. This exactly is why the Canadian Premier League is created, is to replicate the path and journey of a Mark Anthony Kay, but at a larger scale. And I think that's amazing.
Yeah, and look, real quickly to take this slightly a little bit to the side, the Canadian League One Ontario has also produced a ton of female professionals, and that tells me that there's enough talent already to get going on that next project that needs to happen. But we won't get into that today. Maybe we'll have that as a full topic one day.
Yeah,
Canadian Premier League for women.
One day, and that one day will come shortly. But for today, it's all we have to say about the world of football with a soccer perspective. Tomorrow, Thursday, Dwayne and I will do the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast for patrons only. If you like to listen to Dwayne and I talk about Canadian soccer, the Canadian Premier League, Canadian men's national team, and whatever else comes in front of us in the world of Canadian soccer over every week. On Thursdays, you can go to patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. $2 a month, 50 cents a show, will give you access to 4 shows during the month available on Patreon. And it's pretty easy. There's once you click the link and you subscribe, it'll give you a link to add to your favorite application to listen to podcasts, and you can add it, and then you'll get the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast, a premium podcast, but yet you can still have on your favorite podcast app, even though it's from a different type of podcast feed, but you can still have it on your favorite podcast app. That's how easy it is with Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. But until Friday for the weekend preview, Dwayne and I say thank you to Doug McIntyre for his time today. But until next time, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.